Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, June 16th, 2020. Education section. A&M Scholarship Fund to address diversities. Regents approve $100 million in aid for students who are economically disadvantaged or first generation to attend college. By Rega Justin from the Texas Tribune. The Texas A&M University System Board of Regents on Monday unanimously approved the creation of a $100 million scholarship fund to help the system's 11 universities address diversity issues, as well as bolster aid meant for students who are economically disadvantaged or in the first generation of their families to attend college. The aid comes in the middle of the economic crisis spurred by COVID-19, which has left many families out of work. It also comes as protests continue in Texas and nationwide over police brutality and systemic racism. At the A&M System's flagship campus in College Station, protests in particular have sprouted over the presence of a statue honoring Saul Ross, a former Texas governor and president of A&M who served as a general in the Confederate Army. A&M System Chancellor John Sharp said Monday that the fund had been in the works for some time. The goal is to make A&M System's 11 universities look like Texas, Sharp said. Though system-wide, the universities are within a few percentage points of reflecting the state's demographics, the student population on some individual campuses is not where we want it to be. Sharp also emphasized the need for A&M's student population to reflect that of the state. Currently, white students comprise more than half of the student population at A&M's College Station campus, while black students make up less than 4%, according to 2019 data. Hispanic and Asian students make up 21% and 8% of the student population, respectively. Meanwhile, the state's population is 41% white, 39% Hispanic, and 12% black, according to U.S. Census Bureau data. The program will disperse $10 million annually over 10 years, with priority given to students who are low-income, first-generation, and from geographically underrepresented regions of the state. Each campus will be engaged in fundraising to help support this effort, according to a press release. Midland College Profiles by Rebecca Bell. Graduate finds fulfillment in HVAC career. I was always chasing the next dream, the next dollar, Levi Garcia said. I wanted something more stable in my life. After completing an Associate of Applied Science degree in air conditioning, heating, and refrigeration technology, and landing a job with the Bosworth Company, Garcia said he has now found that stability. Born and raised in Midland, Garcia attended both Lee High School and Midland High School before finally obtaining his diploma as a homeschool student. He attended Midland College in 2008, taking core courses and working part-time in the college's financial aid department. It was during this time that his mother passed away from cancer. My first impression of Levi was that he was a good kid, MC Financial Aid Director Yolanda Ramos said. He was a hard worker and determined. He was also genuinely kind. Levi wanted to make his mom proud. He was struggling with her loss. In addition to losing his mother, life threw Garcia some tough curveballs. When my daughter, Scarlett, was just 18 months old, her mom and I separated. Scarlett is the most important thing in my life. I knew I had to take care of her. For several years, I transferred from job to job. I worked as an electrician, a jailer, and even at Rest Haven Cemetery. However, I never knew where I fit in. Garcia took a self-inventory 3 years ago. I knew I was good at two things. I'm a hard worker, and I'm a good dad. A friend told Garcia that Bosworth Company was hiring, so he applied. I figured they would hire me to do electrical work because I had some experience in that field, he said. Instead, Bosworth had me start in residential HVAC. I really liked it, and I found I had a knack for it. I wanted to improve my skills, so my boss suggested that I take some classes at Midland College. Garcia met with Lyndon Pervier, director of the MC Workforce Continuing Education Department, to inquire about the college's HVAC certificate. Pervier told him to obtain two MC donor designated scholarships, Applied Technology and Hodge Continuing Education scholarships. After completing one semester of non-credit courses, he transitioned into MC's HVAC Associate of Applied Technology degree program and took courses from lead instructor Jeroy Roberts. Jeroy went above and beyond, Garcia said. He helped me stay focused. In fact, I can't say enough good things about everyone at Midland College. I am so blessed to have had some of the best people I've ever known at the college. Thanks to the Bosworth Company's tuition reimbursement policy and the MC scholarships, Garcia was able to secure funding for his classes. He obtained his degree last month. The investment in training has paid off, Pervier said. This past January, my daughter was having HVAC issues at her home. She called Bosworth and they sent a service tech. I just happened to go to my daughter's home that evening, and that's when I saw Levi coming around the corner. Thanks to Levi, my daughter and granddaughter had heat on a cold night in January. I've been working for Bosworth for 3 years now, Garcia said. They are a great company and provide the stability I've been needing in my life. They also allow me flexibility with my schedule so that I can take care of my daughter. Residential HVAC is a perfect fit for me. I really enjoy visiting with the customers, especially the older ones. They have so much about life and history to tell. I like hearing their stories, even if it means I'm a little slower getting finished with calls than some of the other jobs. Frank Bell has been a Bosworth customer for many years. Last spring, Bosworth sent Levi to my home for a routine air conditioner check. I was immediately impressed with his professionalism, courtesy, and technical knowledge. Now, when I call Bosworth, I always specifically ask for Levi. I feel truly blessed, Garcia said. It was all possible because of a God who loved me enough to help me through it all. Now I have a job that I can call a career. Educators Visit Homes to Check on Students by Michael Melia from the Associated Press. Hartford, Connecticut. After a knock on his door, third grade student Jamie Lee emerged to see a school principal smiling at him from his doorstep. She held out her arms, offering a socially distant air hug, and told the boy how much she had missed him since the pandemic closed their school building. As they chatted, Principal Tyresha Batchelor picked up on the clue to the question that brought her to the apartment. The boy was not looking up from a smartphone. Twice, she asked what he was doing on it before he confirmed her suspicions. He was playing video games. "I like playing games," Batchelor told the boy as his parents looked on, before suggesting he spend more time first on his daily schoolwork. "I want to make sure you're still learning, okay?" Nearly a third of her students at Rawson Elementary School in Hartford, Connecticut, have been unplugged from distance learning. On a Friday afternoon, as she visited some of their homes, she saw many of the reasons why. Internet service is unreliable. Parents are away at work. Some are uncomfortable with the technology. Still others think their children are doing fine when they are actually using the devices for other things. As the academic year nears an end, districts around the country have been racing to get large numbers of no-show students back on track. It's one thing not to participate this spring, when expectations are lower because of the crisis. It will be another if distance learning resumes in the fall, when the stakes are raised by the return of formal grading and attendance tracking. Students who are struggling before the pandemic were the ones falling farthest behind. Across the Hartford school system, roughly 80% of students are at least partially active in distance learning. Among students considered most at risk because of issues including past absenteeism, disciplinary problems, and poor academic performance, less than half are participating at all. Bachelor made her first stop, the home of a student whose mother works late, hoping to catch her. The girl's older sister, a high school student, often watches her, but there was no answer at the door. Bachelor left a voicemail on the mother's phone. How do we get in touch with the kids? This is it. This is like our last effort before summer. For me, it's trying to figure out what exactly is it that we're missing. Hartford Superintendent Leslie Towns Rodriguez said, first of all, are they safe? I just want to know if they're safe. Many districts report engagement has improved since the scramble of the March transition to distance learning, but it's nowhere near full participation. Some students still have not been heard from at all. At the 4,800-student Jamestown Public Schools in the southwest corner of New York, Superintendent Brett Aththorpe said about 75% are engaged and most of the others participate at least somewhat. Around 1%, he said, have fallen off the map. Of everything through this virus, that probably has worried me the most, says Aththorpe, whose district has been reaching out to students and their families through school administrators, counselors, and as a last resort, attendance officers. At Clark County Schools in Nevada, more than 30% of students, or more than 12,000, were unaccounted for in mid-April. Outreach efforts whittled the number to about 4,500 students by the end of the school year in May. Some students needed computers, and others had taken jobs. On her visits to families in Hartford's North End, an area with high poverty and low rates of home internet access, Bachelor brings books to give the children. She is accompanied by a representative from a community agency that helps families with food, clothing, and finances. School administrators decide among themselves who will visit families of low-activity students based on who has the strongest relationships. The goals of the conversations with parents, Bachelor says, are to stress that the school is still in session, to ask what the impediments are, and to gauge parents' understanding of the process and the learning. At Jamie Lee's house, her father, Oral Henderson, said his son was comfortable on the computer, and as far as he knew, the boy had been keeping up with his school lessons, despite a weak internet signal from a community provider. A restaurant worker who has been without a job amid the coronavirus scare, Henderson said it has been a challenge at times for them all. On the next home visit, Bachelor met a father who said he was uncomfortable with computers. His daughter was spending hours on the digital learning platforms, he said, but they were not able to figure out how to upload assignments. Don't let that stop you, Bachelor told the third grader's parents, assuring them the technical issue could be figured out later. Just let her go in and do the things that she can do. For her part, the girl, Nevaeh, said she is enjoying the online learning. Some of the challenges are pretty hard, but I still get through them, she said. Even when they're really hard, I still get through some of them. Bachelor said the effects of the disruption will not be clear until educators see students' work in the fall, when she expects many will be dealing with various kinds of trauma from the months at home. Nationally, research has suggested the shutdown could cost students the equivalent of a full school year worth of academic gains. For now, Bachelor said parents and educators have been doing their best. It's important for people to know that people are shouldering up. People are working really hard to make it work. People are hopeful. They're resilient. And because of that, we're able to keep students engaged. I have not been told by a parent, oh, we're not doing this. They may be having a difficult time doing it, but parents want their students to succeed, and they want to work with us.
Permian High School Principal, Leading for Houston, by Ruth Campbell. Building Alpine's Resilience Fund. The Alpine Downtown Association has voted unanimously to create a GoFundMe page it calls the Business Rescue Fund to help businesses who had to shut down for the COVID-19 outbreak. Its goal is $25,000. A recent news story told about a citizen complaining that a restaurant had added a surcharge of $2 and change to the tab because of its losses from the shutdown. $2? ADA President Jim Street asked. I'd give 10 times that to help them recover. He said restaurants have been particularly hard hit. Most businesses can maintain their inventory during a shutdown, and it's still there when they are allowed to reopen. But most of a restaurant's inventory is perishable and has to be thrown away, and new inventory acquired after the shutdown ends. But awards will not be limited to restaurants. All businesses that had to close down suffered losses. A committee will determine how disbursements will be figured. A determining factor could be how much they were able to recover, if anything, from the Paycheck Protection Program and other government assistance. To contribute, log on to gofundme.com/f/alpine-texas-resilience-fund. The ADA also discussed some kind of coming out celebration when the shutdown ends to honor businesses that have hung on and survived. Conley Razor of Alpine Radio, who has been tasked with organizing the event, said he has a database of about 45 businesses. He asked if it should include big box stores that are part of a national chain and are not really small businesses. Street suggested they should be contacted. They may want to participate, and some have expressed an interest in helping the Alpine business community flourish. Razor said he will contact those businesses seeking ideas of how to celebrate their coming out. He suggested discounts and other promotions to help spur sales. He said the event could include a small parade to advertise their business, and awards could be made to those like Porter's Grocery Stores, who went above and beyond to help citizens weather the shutdown. Razor said he could mention these businesses and others on his radio show. He is on KVLF 1240 AM from 10 AM to 1 PM Monday through Friday and 7 to 9 AM Saturday. He also hosts a science show from 10 to 11 AM on Saturday. And Stuart Ramser said Viva Big Bend will continue this year, July 23rd through 26th, in 17 venues throughout the Tri-County Big Bend region. He said he plans to work with businesses to cross-promote with them, perhaps offering discounts or other promotions to those wearing Viva armbands, and he said he would work to help promote them on his website and other promotional materials. To learn more about the Alpine Downtown Association, visit the website at downtownalpinetx.com.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, June 14, 2020. Community must step up for health care. Richard Coates, OGX Resources. As the past chairman of the Board of Trustees of the hospital, a current member of the Board of Governors and co-chair of the Say Yes to Healthcare campaign, I am intimately aware of the upcoming challenges faced by the Midland County Hospital District, MCHD. I am also aware of how fortunate we are to have such a well-run hospital in our community that has built up excellent healthcare services over the last 20 years. The ongoing pandemic has made it difficult, but we have been using our best efforts to get the message out concerning the vital upcoming sales tax election. We have conducted numerous virtual presentations and held as many face-to-face meetings as possible. Based on these interactions, we have fielded reoccurring questions that I would like to share with you. If this election is successful, will it raise my property taxes? No, this is not a property tax. It is a sales tax and will apply only to the purchase of taxable goods and services in Midland County, regardless of where the buyer lives. This provides an opportunity to spread the cost of Midland's healthcare infrastructure to everyone who benefits from it, including residents of the rural counties around us. Why does MCHD find it necessary to propose a 0.25% sales tax? MCHD has proposed a 0.25% sales tax to offset upcoming cuts in federal funding that MCHD has used to fund a long list of community health care services that benefit everyone in Midland. The first year's cuts, beginning October 1, are expected to total $23 million and will grow to $38 million per year by 2024. A 0.25% sales tax on all taxable goods and services sold in Midland County should yield about $28 million per year based on current estimates in new revenue for MCHD, offsetting most of those federal funding cuts. What will a 0.25% sales tax cost me? An additional 0.25% sales tax will cost most of us very little. The tax does not apply to groceries and medications. Local sales tax does not apply to vehicle sales. When you do buy something taxable, the additional cost of that purchase is minimal, just a quarter for every $100 you spend. If you buy a new $600 TV, the 0.25% sales tax will add $1.50 to your purchase price. A $4 fast food meal will cost an extra penny. Thousands of consumer and business transactions, each with a minimal additional cost, add up to significant new revenue to help MCHD replace its lost federal funding. What are the consequences if this election fails? If the voters don't approve the sales tax, MCHD will have to consider substantial increases in property taxes or cuts in community health care services. Property taxes would have to double or more to replace the federal funding cuts. Reducing services could mean losing your physician, eliminating graduate medical education at Texas Tech, reducing services provided by 3 Midland Community Health Care Services clinics, reducing availability of specialists in an emergency, and or eliminating behavioral health services currently funded by MCHD. Neither a big tax increase nor the loss of vital health care services that benefit everyone in Midland County would be an acceptable outcome. Will it be safe for me to vote? Voting will be safe and efficient. Because we are sharing polling locations with the primary runoffs, voters will be asked to sign in separately for one of the primaries plus the hospital district election. They are taking extra precautions to promote social distancing and hygiene, including carefully cleaning voting machines between uses. Early voting runs June 29 through July 10, and Election Day is July 14. Voters who are over 65, disabled, or out of town through the voting period are eligible to vote by mail. Go to www.co.midland.tx.us/328/elections-office for all the details. Midland County Hospital District has worked diligently to respond to our community's demands for more physicians and other vital health care services. Many of those important services do not pay for themselves, and the federal funding that has supported them for many years is now going away. If we are to maintain the comprehensive health care system MCHD has built over the last 20 years, our community must step up to fund it. We strongly encourage you to vote for Proposition A in the July 14 election. Your health and the quality of life in Midland depend on it. Thank you. For more information, go to sayyestohealthcare.com. Board members got it right by honoring community's wishes. Stuart Doreen, sdoreen@hurstmp.com. I want to see Midland ISD go to an intersessional calendar. I believe the early start, the multiple weeks off in the fall and spring, and the days that teachers have for planning and assessment would be beneficial for academic performance. But having written that, I believe Brian Murray, Tommy Bishop, Robert Marquez, and Board President Rick Davis absolutely made the correct decision to vote down the attempt to move away from the traditional calendar for the 2020-21 school year. While I appreciate districts' staff attempting this academic Hail Mary, the timing was not ideal, and the minute they put that survey into play, the conversation was over. Midlanders hadn't been properly educated on the intersessional calendar, its benefits, especially academic, and the misconceptions, and there was time to do so. In February, when an alternative calendar was first pitched to district leaders and then in the weeks that followed. Watching the meeting online, I thought the result would be different. But I was wrong. I didn't give enough credit to Murray, Bishop, Marquez, and David that they would take this opportunity to honor the will of those who took part in the process. The district received thousands of responses to the two surveys that went out, and I agree with the four trustees that participation like that can't be ignored. This has been an interesting time for the board. In May, they voted down an item that would have allowed the district's superintendent to seek Texas Education Agency waivers without first going to the board. In retrospect, it appeared to be a rather harmless request. However, their decision was correct because more explanation should have taken place on that particular item in advance of the meeting. If it was easy to explain to the community, do so before the meeting, not during it. The same holds true for the calendar decision. If the right call was to go with an intersessional calendar, begin educating the community more than 2 months before the start of the subsequent school year. Is this the start of a trend? Maybe. The district has had meetings with community members who were more vocal in their opposition to the most recent school bond proposal. If an election doesn't take place before November 2021, they will have started their conversation with the community 17 months before an election. That is ample time to make sure everyone is heard. I can say with certainty that providing time to educate a community is better than the alternative. Government entities get themselves in trouble with their constituents when it appears something comes across as a surprise. Midland ISD's decision to purchase Ranchland Hills Golf Club with basically little or no prior explanation is one example. The city's decision to spend tens of millions of dollars in incentives and tax abatements on a downtown hotel project is another. Educate the community. Have a conversation with the residents. Make sure you can say that all of the information was out there. This community has had enough surprises recently to last a lifetime. For anyone in government who skips the education process, my concern is the message you are sending. If your plan is a good one, people will understand. And if it is not a good plan, the process can make it better. Thank you again to Murray, Bishop, Marquez, and Davis. Your decision to say intersessional can happen, but not in 2020 through 21, was the right call. Turning the fire down. Texas will lead and fight to reduce flaring. Wayne Christian, Railroad Commission of Texas. Over the past several months, the foundations of the Texas economy have been rattled. Jobs have been lost at heart-breaking speed. Some businesses have closed, and others worry about their future. As chairman of the Railroad Commission of Texas, the agency that regulates the oil and natural gas industry, I take personal responsibility for ensuring that Texans have the energy needed to rebuild and grow, and that the industry can continue to operate responsibly, especially during these difficult times. The oil and gas industry is central to our lives and to the Texas economy, supporting hundreds of thousands of high-paying jobs and providing significant funding for our schools, universities, and essential services. Being deliberate in our work to fortify our energy economy is a worthy undertaking. In April, I announced the formation of a Blue Ribbon Task Force on Oil Recovery and challenged its members to look at every aspect of the industry and to make recommendations for what could be done to assist operators and save jobs. The task force focused on operations, permitting, timelines, tax policy and deadlines, storage capacity and pipeline capacity, among other issues. The commission acted swiftly to implement many of the recommendations to secure Texas oil and gas jobs while maintaining health, safety, and environmental protections. We recognize there is more work to be done. The Commission, Texas oil and gas operators, and a variety of stakeholders agree that we can further enhance operational and environmental performance in oil and gas operations by taking steps to reduce flaring and methane emissions. Last fall, I instructed staff to analyze flaring in Texas. Their analysis showed that the average monthly statewide flaring rate since January 2014 has been about 1.24%, fluctuating between 0.8% to 2.2%. The data is taken from flaring amounts and gas production reported on operators' monthly production reports to the commission. While flaring intensity in Texas is lower than most other oil-producing countries, we have a responsibility to lead, especially as the nation's number one producer of oil and gas. Due to shut-ins associated with COVID-19, I have heard anecdotally that flaring has been drastically reduced statewide. This makes now an opportune time to implement meaningful recommendations to reduce flaring before oil and gas production climbs back to previous highs. At our last open meeting, I challenged the task force to continue its work to make recommendations for addressing flaring in Texas. My priorities are threefold: to reduce flaring as a routine practice, to minimize the circumstances where safety necessitates flaring, and to bring the full weight of technology and innovation to bear to accomplish the goal. Like every challenge the state and industry has faced, technology is the key to progress. Utilizing the task force to bring together industry experts whose inventions and innovations have revolutionized the oil and gas industry and contributed significantly to environmental progress is a good starting place. Their operational and technical expertise, coupled with input from other stakeholders, will lead to a meaningful and sustainable path forward in reducing flaring. The Railroad Commission meets Tuesday, and I have invited members of the task force and other interested stakeholders, including representatives of environmental groups and oil and gas operators, to participate in these important and ongoing discussions. I remain confident that the bright minds of Texas can come together to solve problems. Together, we can continue to develop solutions that improve environmental performance while meeting the energy needs of the nation and the world. Out-of-town protesters, we have this handled. Latricia Smith. Recently, it has been brought to my and my peers' attention that a group of protesters from Dallas are on their way to Midland to protest what they perceive as police injustice in the case of Ty Anders. First, I would like to note that my fellow organizers, the protesters who have come out to demonstrate against racial injustice, and I are not officially affiliated with Black Lives Matter. We simply represent a larger movement over a broad spectrum of racial and systematic injustices that have plagued this nation for many generations. Secondly, we understand why protesters from other areas of Texas and the country may take an interest in our city due to the Anders case. But I would like to say with confidence, we have this handled. Since our first protest, I and many others have been in close and personal contact with members of Midland's government on how we, as a community, may prevent and solve instances of racial injustice. I strongly advise those who have protested with us before to take extreme caution in any situation they may choose to participate in. If you do not believe that these demonstrators have Midland's best interest at heart, please stay away. Lastly, I would like to thank the government officials of Midland for listening to us, taking us seriously and understanding our fight, and genuinely working with us to help find solutions. KMB grades city on appearance. Vascon Oil and Ranch recognized for landscaping. By J.C. Lewis. jc.lewis@hurstmp.com. Keep Midland Beautiful volunteers and staff conducted the annual Community Appearance Index, which showed a cleaner Midland. The index, which was done on Wednesday, showed that the city is cleaner by 0.2 of 1%, according to a press release from the nonprofit. Volunteers divided Midland into 5 quadrants and toured the area scouring various streets on a scale of 1 through 4 on visible litter, illegal signs, graffiti, abandoned junk vehicles, and outside storage. After all scores were returned and calculated, the overall score for Midland is 1.7, down from 2019's score of 1.9. The survey is done annually by Keep Midland Beautiful and is a tool developed by Keep Midland Beautiful to indicate litter and community appearance trends, according to the release. The appearance index for illegal signs, graffiti, abandoned junk vehicles, and outside storage in Midland was given a 2.5 overall, up from 2 last year. The score saw the biggest increase in outside storage around Midland. Outside storage was the most scored category last year also, according to the release. Community Award. KMB has resumed its Community Achievement Award and presented it on Friday to Fasken Oil and Ranch. The nonprofit's Beautification Committee selected the company at 6101 Holiday Hill Road for its use of native plants, landscape design, and commitment to maintain their landscape, according to a press release from KMB. Fasken Oil and Ranch uses natural resources such as water and plant materials that allow for a healthier, longer living, and mature landscape, according to the release. Oil Price Rally Comes to a Halt by Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. Crude oil's price rally came to a halt as jitters about the coronavirus pandemic returned, deflating hopes of a relatively quick economic recovery. Crude prices recorded their first weekly loss in 7 weeks, as Thursday's $3.26 price decline, the most in 2 weeks, wiped out Tuesday and Wednesday's gains. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange lost another 8 cents Friday to close the week at $36.26 a barrel, down from $38.19 at Monday's close. The posted price ended the week at $32.75 a barrel. Natural gas prices also continued to slump on the NYMEX. After rising above $1.80, prices lost 8 cents per MCF Friday to close at $1.731 per MCF, down from Monday's close of $1.789 per MCF. Also sending prices lower was a rise in U.S. oil inventories to a record high of 538.1 million barrels and signs that true oil demand recovery remains shaky amid a second wave of COVID-19 cases in some U.S. states, Bloomberg reported. That stockpile was the highest since Bloomberg began keeping records in 1982. Bloomberg also cited a report from Standard Chartered analysts Emily Ashford and Paul Horsnell that said many in the oil market are too optimistic that the impacts of coronavirus will be a short-term blip. Get ready for the continued roller coaster ride of oil prices, Grant Schwartz Welder, president and owner of OTA Compression LLC, OTA Environmental, and Kymark, told the Reporter Telegram in an email. With OPEC Plus managing production only on a short-term time frame and the COVID-19 virus still active, you still have two large negative drivers for low commodity prices in play. Then throw an operator starting to restart production, EOG Parsley, and the market will continue to fluctuate. Can you see any of this changing during the next 6 to 12 months? Probably not, as a diminished economy makes the margin of error even smaller and more sensitive to any supply or demand changes. Small Bites. Midland's Albertsons stores now called United Supermarkets. By J.C. Lewis. J.C.Lewis at HearstNP.com. Midland's two Albertsons markets, part of the United family, now have United Supermarkets signs. This move is part of the United family's effort to better reflect its West Texas roots and create the best shopping experience for its guests in the Permian Basin, according to a press release from United. Shoppers will see this reflected in the slogan, "We are West Texas and West Texas is United." Market Street, which is also part of the United family, has not changed its name. Donations for Social Justice. Albertsons Companies announced Wednesday a $5 million donation to social justice organizations, as well as those on the front line of the fight for equality, according to a press release. The first step the company took was a meeting between executive leaders and African American associates and several of its associate resource groups. The company's leadership heard that they should hold similar conversations with their own teams throughout the organization, which it has already initiated, and take concrete action to foster lasting change, according to the release. Albertsons Companies is donating $2 million toward the social justice efforts of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund and the National Urban League, Incorporated. $1 million toward the company's African American Associate Resource Group's efforts to partner with local organizations that are working to support communities and neighborhood actions throughout their market areas. A $1 million reserve fund for social justice and diversity initiatives in the future, including community outreach, supplier diversity, and ongoing education. Midland's Gas Prices Closer to Rest of State by Stuart Doreen. Astorine at HearstMP.com. For the first time in recent memory, the average price of gas in Midland is getting closer to the state average, according to AAA Texas. In 26 of 27 larger metropolitan areas across Texas, the price of gas jumped by 10 cents or more. The state average climbed 14 cents. Victoria has the highest week-over-week increase, 20 cents. Midland's price increase was 11 cents, which was not only on the lower end of increases this week, but put the average in Midland within 8 cents of the state average. AAA Texas reported an average in Midland of $1.88 a gallon, which is tied with Odessa for the second highest in the state. However, the difference this week is that the rest of the state is much closer to the prices in the area. In fact, 17 of the 26 larger metropolitan areas are within 10 cents of the average in Midland. Across the region, the following averages were reported: $1.70 in Lubbock, an increase of 13 cents, $1.72 in Amarillo, an increase of 10 cents, $1.75 in San Angelo, an increase of 13 cents, $1.86 in Abilene, an increase of 15 cents, and $1.92 in El Paso, an increase of 3 cents. Lubbock and Sherman-Denison have the lowest average in the state. Texas hasn't seen gas prices this low at the beginning of June since 2005. AAA Texas spokesman Daniel Armbruster stated in a press release, "Demand for retail gasoline continues to rise, forcing pump prices up for drivers. While gas prices are increasing, Texas has the fifth lowest gas price average of any state in the country at $1.80 per gallon. 1 year ago, drivers in Midland paid $2.66 a gallon, an increase of 78 cents. The average in Texas 1 year ago was $2.41, which is 61 cents more year over year. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. Price at the pump. Source, TexasGasPrices.com. This week, El Paso, $1.92. Odessa, $1.88. Midland, $1.88. Abilene, $1.86. Texarkana, $1.84. State average, $1.80. Last week, El Paso, $1.89. Midland, $1.77. Odessa, $1.73. Abilene, $1.71. Texarkana, $1.71. State average, $1.66.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 14th, 2020. Your response matters. The 2020 census counts every person living in the United States and five U.S. territories. In mid-March, homes across the country began receiving invitations to complete the 2020 census. Once the invitation arrives, you should respond for your home in one of three ways: online, by phone, or by mail. When you respond to the census, you'll tell the Census Bureau where you live as of April 1st. Your responses inform where over $675 billion is distributed each year to communities nationwide for clinics, schools, roads, and more. Census data gives community leaders vital information to make decisions about building community centers, opening businesses, and planning for the future. Responding also fulfills your civic duty because it's mandated by the U.S. Constitution. The United States has counted its population every 10 years since 1790. To respond or for more information, call 844-330-2020 or visit 2020census.gov. Supporting Small Businesses by Heather Massey, Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. Local small businesses across the United States have not been immune to the struggles caused by COVID-19. BBB's Business Impact Report surveyed more than 1,300 accredited businesses, 70% of which believed the outbreak would have a significant negative impact. Their main concerns were keeping up with customer demand and paying employees, with cash flow being the biggest worry. With Texas continuing to reopen and increase occupancies, consumers have even more opportunities to support the small businesses in their communities. Patronizing small retailers and restaurants around town can help your local favorites recover as they open their doors. Use these tips from your local Better Business Bureau as you look to support small businesses. Follow protocols. State and local governments will have protocols in place to allow safe shopping, including maximum occupancies and more. Individual businesses may also place their own protocols, asking customers to wear masks or refrain from touching products. Follow these protocols as they are in place for your safety. You can check gov.texas.gov to see what state-mandated measures small businesses in your area are taking. Stay updated. Refer to the business website, emails, and social media pages for the latest updates on store hours, limited menus, and more. Remember gift cards. Many consumers have supported businesses during temporary closures by purchasing gift cards. Now is the time to use them, or gift cards from holidays and birthdays that haven't been used yet. Shop online. You can save some time and check the retailer's website to see if the item you're searching for is in stock. Many stores, like restaurants, are now offering curbside pickup for their products. Have patience. While navigating this new normal can be frustrating, remember businesses and employees are adapting as well. Work with business owners and employees as they implement new policies to keep their customers safe and allow them to keep their doors open. Communities have been coming together during trying times, and supporting local businesses is a way to continue offering support. Check BBB.org to find trustworthy small businesses near you.
Is alcohol up your nose a good idea? Dear Dr. Roach, my husband stated that every day he soaks some toilet tissue with 91% rubbing alcohol and shoves it up his nose. What's your opinion about that practice? Is it a good or a bad idea? And why? M.W. Answer: that's a bad idea. The first reason is that it isn't helpful. I imagine he is doing so to reduce infection risk, but it is ineffective at doing so. The second reason is its toxicity. Rubbing isopropyl alcohol is irritating to the mucous membranes of the nose, its vapor is irritating, and it is modestly toxic if swallowed. I would also be concerned that toilet tissue could fall apart in the nose, leaving soaked tissue behind, further subjecting the nose to irritation and the sinuses and lungs to alcohol vapors. If he really wants to rinse his nose, normal saline solution would be ideal, but even that is not necessary for most people. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, June 18th, 2020, etc. Kicked out by Dad, who thinks she's ungrateful. Dear Abby, I am 19 and have been kicked out of my house. I'm grateful for everything my parents have done for me. My dad continues to compare me to my older siblings, although I'm the exact opposite of them. They are not going to college. They barely graduated from high school and continue to abuse alcohol and drugs. I'm in college earning almost all A's. I graduated from high school with flying colors and have a steady job. I provide for myself, food, gas, buying anything I need, and pay for car insurance. I have tried my hardest to be the best daughter and a good influence for my younger siblings. I have asked my father multiple times during the last year to stop comparing me to my older siblings. He hasn't. Our last conversation was a few weeks ago when he told me to pack my stuff and get out of the house because I was an ungrateful daughter and hoeing around just like my older siblings. I have been focusing on my education and can't understand how he came to that conclusion. Frankly, I was very hurt he thought that of me. I'm not my siblings, I am myself, and I'm doing the best I can to give myself a successful future. My father refuses to see that. What should I do? Bewildered daughter in Texas. Dear daughter, I don't know what's wrong with your father, but something is. You appear to be mature and responsible and doing your best to lay the foundation for a successful future. I applaud you for it. If it's possible for you to live elsewhere, perhaps with other relatives, and avoid your father's uncalled for verbal abuse, it might be healthier for you. Do not expect him to be pleased about it, because no matter how hard you try, you may never be able to please him, so be prepared. Dear Abby, my boyfriend and I have been dating for 3 years. The one issue we argue about is religion. I am a Catholic, and he's from another Christian denomination. I respect all religions and am open-minded. However, after going to his church 3 times, I didn't like it at all. They have many strict rules which, if not obeyed, will result in a person being shunned. What kind of church does that? They compare Catholics to themselves and say everything Catholics do is wrong according to the Bible. I have never felt so unwelcome in my life. My boyfriend's parents want me to convert, but I don't want to. Because of this, his relationship with his parents is being affected. He plans to quit his church and become an atheist. I don't know how to feel about this. It would be hard to convince him to join my church. We have had many fights over this, and I wonder if we should just break up. That way, we wouldn't have to discuss who is converting or where we are going to marry. Please give me some advice. Stressed in the Islands. Dear Stressed, considering the stance your boyfriend's family's religion has on marrying out of the faith, I'm surprised your relationship has made it this far. Fighting benefits neither of you. Talking about this calmly and rationally might bring you closer. If he quits his church, his family and friends will make every effort to isolate and punish him. He may have to completely rebuild his social relationships. If he has any sort of religious inclination, rather than him overreacting by becoming an instant atheist, the two of you might like to explore finding a denomination together that fills your needs. But be prepared for pushback because his parents, and possibly yours, are not going to like it. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note: Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Gemini and a moon in Taurus until 5 p.m. when the moon enters Gemini. Happy birthday for Thursday, June 18, 2020. Fun and influential, you get bored easily, and quarantine has not been easy. But it is better for you to withdraw from life occasionally. The latter half of your year is a hit, and you saved money, so you will do well. If single, you search constantly for a mate who will complete you. If attached, you are attached at the hip. Your union is very intense and strong. Sagittarius likes to play boss. The stars show the kind of day you'll have, 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 3 stars. You will feel the urge to work harder and earn more. If only you could. Prepare for an unexpected expense or purchase. A partner's judgment can be a bit off. Do not take financial advice from others. Verify information. Tonight, a novel goal becomes important. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 5 stars. Others will admire and appreciate you today. Your legendary charm is in top form. Put effort into solidifying a relationship. Take the time to do some soul searching, defining what it is you really want. Tonight, you feel drawn toward an exercise program. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 4 stars. Your perceptions are broadened and changed. Usually a chatterbox, you will find yourself being more discreet and reserved today. You will cherish your peace and privacy. Being a source of hidden support uplifts you in subtle yet powerful ways. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 4 stars. Friends will be especially caring and affectionate today. Enjoy companionship, but clarify your feelings if you're not reciprocating a budding romantic mood. A professional associate becomes a true friend. Combine business with pleasure. Tonight, network online. Join a professional group. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 3 stars. A new perspective on how to apply your educational background to your career and work develops, and you come to terms with long-standing concerns. Break work into small segments and take frequent breaks during the day. Tonight, enjoy the moment. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 5 stars. Plans that have been on hold, perhaps for the past few months, may now be undertaken. This includes travel opportunities. You feel such a relief and a broadening of your horizons. An invitation also comes in from a distant family member. Tonight, lots of phone calls. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 3 stars. Use caution before forming financial partnerships. Loans you make may turn into gifts. Be wary of advice and double-check your resources. Smile if you are the topic of a juicy story, and just say, true. Tonight, connect with your unconscious or the divine. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 2 stars. A relationship might begin or end suddenly. Partners are the source of surprise. Learn by observing human nature. Do not struggle against changes. Today promotes clear conversation and decision-making, which will help. Tonight, you really burn the midnight oil. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 3 stars. You will be intrigued by coworkers and could develop closer friendships with them. Do not become too swept up in job politics, however. Your health might be improved by color and sound therapies. A neighbor calls for help. Tonight, news from longtime friends and relatives. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 5 stars. Today brings a close link to someone considerably older or younger. A really wonderful intimacy develops for you online. A valued and cherished relationship becomes more stable and comfortable. Love will smile on you. Tonight, you feel accepted and included. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 5 stars. Home is where the heart is. The time to take personal action is at hand. You will feel energized, and slow but steady progress is made. Relationships seem intensely emotional compared to this, especially with your parents. Tonight, you give thanks. Pisces, February 19 through March 20, 3 stars. Short trips and communication are highlighted today. Most of it will be pleasant enough, but beware of arguments. You may feel exceptionally restless, but do not venture too far into the unknown. Stay in the neighborhood. Tonight, witness power struggles. Born today, musician Paul McCartney, 1942. Critic Roger Ebert, 1942. Actress Isabella Rossellini, 1952.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.